Bitcoin as a currency on the internet, peer-to-peer, managed by the participants mm-hmm. in it, is the perfect libertarian solution to the money enigma.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with George Gilder from Freedom Fest 2014 in Las Vegas. George Gilder is the author most recently of Knowledge and Power. He is lately passionate about Bitcoin, so we're going to find out what's turning him on about this cryptocurrency. George, thanks for talking to us.
Great to be here.
You know, you have a history of being ahead of the curve. You helped start the Reagan Revolution and the supply side revolution with books like Wealth and Poverty. You were way ahead of the curve on the telecomputer, you know, which turned into the internet, about how when things get really small and, you know, they get more and more powerful in the telecosm. Now you are absolutely passionate about Bitcoin. What was your aha moment that you, okay, Bitcoin is the deal of the future?
Well, I just written Knowledge and Power about information theory. Right. And I figured that Shannon's information theory was perfect instrument for creating a network that mm-hmm. could efficiently transmit bits and bytes.
Right.
However, to have a civilization, you need more than just bits and bytes. You need contracts, you need transactions, mm-hmm. you need provable facts, you need titles, you need notarizations, you need identities, you need all these other factors that really can't be accommodated very well on the internet. So you have to have banks and all these other outside channels to conduct transactions. You have this comedy of bogus contracts as we're supposed to sign as you proceed.
Right. You click the button, you accept with which company reads who the hell
knows.
The
internet is full of junk.
Right.
And it pretends that a lot of its stuff is free, which of course is a lie. So it's full of lies. It's a hustle. Okay. It's a lot of the characteristics of the internet are the result of just having a pure Shannon information without higher
Shannon information.
Shannon identifies information exclusively by its surprisal, unexpected bits.
Right.
That's how you measure information and bandwidth across the net. And it was Shannon's a great genius, and he created the perfect theory for the network layer. Mm-hmm. But as you know, you need more than three layers in the network. You got to have a whole apparatus on top of the mm-hmm. network in order to actually conduct provable transactions.
So how does Bitcoin
Bitcoin is a breakthrough in information theory that allows, without reference to trusted third parties, mm-hmm. people outside the internet, to conduct provable transactions, mm-hmm. timestamp transactions that can't be changed.
Mm-hmm. And can't be faked,
can't be duplicated,
so
can't be.
Bitcoin is the currency the internet deserves.
It's the currency the internet deserves and needs.
And a way we have real reality, for lack of a better term, in the internet, and now, but you always had to step out of the internet in order to get money, or it's kind of like you're at college, you're always going, hey, mom, send me some food, send me some money. And now you're saying we've left home, like the internet can self-suffice.
That's right.
In terms of transactions.
And it's also a better currency. It has a wonderful insight that the world is deflationary under capitalism.
Okay, yeah, tell us about, you know, this, because we hear this all the time. Well, deflation, you know, the only thing worse than inflation is deflation. Why is it a good thing that capitalism is deflationary?
Capitalism is deflationary. I write about learning curves. I've been writing about them for 50 years, I guess.
Maybe sometime you'll finally get it right.
and learning curves are the characteristic of capitalism. Mm-hmm. I have finally gotten it right. Yeah. I've figured out that wealth is knowledge, and you can tell that because, you know, the Neanderthal in his cave, mm-hmm. as Tom Sowell wrote years ago, had all the material resources we have today. Mm-hmm. All the advance is increase in knowledge. And growth is learning. Mm-hmm. And the reason all the consulting groups, when they analyze businesses, find learning curves everywhere, and why Ray Kurzweil envisages these a singularity of converging learning curves, it's because learning is the heart of economic growth. Learning is economic
growth. And it's learning, I mean, it's to economize, to you know, so every time we start a fire, we don't have to go through 10,000 years of Neanderthal
learning, right?
So capitalism is deflationary because it always takes, it ultimately takes less time and less resources to get things done.
That's right.
Why are people
because
afraid of
20 to 30% a year, 20 to 30% for every doubling of total units is the learning curve.
Okay. So why are people afraid of deflation then?
Because this is like, governments constantly screw up economies, causing and screw up monetary systems, and cause prices to go up, and blame the currency.
So before we get back to Bitcoin, though, you know, but then will people invest in things if they say, oh well, my house, you know, it's worth $100,000 now, and in 20 years, if capitalism's working, it'll be worth $20,000. Who's going to buy a house?
Wealth, everything around the house will have increased in value. All the equipment in the house will be enhancing your life. And whether the shell of that you erected in 2014 will... I just think it's a meaningless question.
Right. Okay.
The process by which... learning pervades the economy, produces a cornucopia.
What that does is led
me to the further insight about Bitcoin.
Yeah, well, okay, now let's talk about how is Bitcoin deflationary? Because, you know, if you were lucky enough to buy Bitcoin a few years ago, you're wealthy now, especially if you take it out of the internet and lock
Satoshi's
it down.
Satoshi's worth $1 billion bucks, maybe.
So how is it deflationary then? Or when do we get to the point where Bitcoin is no longer a speculative currency or a speculative good?
Speculation is a big debate over how... what proportion of the world's transactions Bitcoin will finally accommodate. Bitcoin is currently undergoing a market process, but when it reaches its full maturity with 21 million coins, which is the cap, asymptotic cap that's been imposed through the algorithm itself, which assures that it means that... that it will tend to be deflationary.
Because there'll be more goods chasing after the same number of bitcoins.
Yeah, that's right. But this is life.
Yeah.
The other way I came to this insight is of the zero marginal cost society. You've heard about that. That capitalist economics doesn't work anymore because we're in a world of abundance. But money can't be abundant in the same way that goods and services are. Money has to be the foundation to prioritize and evaluate. So the question is, what is scarce when everything else becomes abundant? And what is scarce when everything else becomes abundant is ultimately the residual resource, time.
Okay, so and how does Bitcoin, now we're going from Bitcoin to time,
well,
so what? How does that?
Because the production of Bitcoin is rigorously regulated by the passage of time and the pursuit of irreversibility. Bitcoin is, you know, Satoshi all through his original paper talks about irreversible currency. That's the big goal. And the only thing in the universe that's really irreversible in this sense is time.
Okay. So obviously Satoshi didn't see the first Superman movie. Superman goes back in time, but there is no going back in time. But then what happened? I mean, like, how is it that Bitcoin is infinitely divisible?
It's divisible to a hundred millionth of.
I mean, because in a kind of Milton Friedman wet dream, you know, you would have a government or a robot kicking out a certain amount of predetermined expansion of money,
yeah.
you know, on a regular basis, no matter what.
On an assumption of inflation.
Right.
And Milton Friedman was the greatest figure in libertarian economics.
Right.
I don't deny it for a minute. But he did make a major error. Mm-hmm. MV equals PT. That's his great formula. The money supply times the velocity mm-hmm. equals output. But what we've learned overwhelmingly in recent mm-hmm. years is velocity is not a constant.
Mm-hmm.
Milton Friedman thought that the money supply controlled. And because he thought the mm-hmm. money supply controlled, he thought you had to have some centralized control of money mm-hmm. and that the central body that controlled the emission of money should be regulated
right.
to accommodate economic growth,
right.
which was...
And he was wrong in thinking that you need money, a growth in the money supply to have economic growth.
Yes. And that money rules
yeah.
rather than velocity. He mm-hmm. thought velocity was a constant and the money supply mm-hmm. could be manipulated by governments to
right.
actually favor
yeah.
outcomes.
So,
and I think that velocity rules, and velocity means we can rule, that mm-hmm. Bitcoin as a currency on the internet, peer-to-peer, managed by the participants mm-hmm. in it, is the perfect libertarian solution to the money enigma.
You have been, a proselytizer for the idea that we've, continually, at least in 20th century terms, have gone from a totalitarian or a hierarchical
yep.
society to a heterarchical
That's
society.
Right.
So Bitcoin is kind of like
one
of the
hierarchical
it's the
money.
Ultimate. Let me ask you this though, because there's the question of there's the real world or what we'll call the real world and the internet up here. Bitcoin's operating up here. People are trading all around the world. We've already seen cases where the government goes in and shuts things down and takes Bitcoin. And why are we just deluding ourselves that we're in our little happy space up here? And the minute any government wants to, they're going to come in and, the guys with guns, guns may not fire in cyberspace, but they don't have to. So is this all just kind of a fantasy, a cloud cuckoo land?
I think that this is an infrastructure for the internet. Mm-hmm. The government can always come with guns and attack our human
yeah.
bodies and require us to report everything mm-hmm. we do with our bitcoins and otherwise invade our lives and manipulate mm-hmm. our futures and close down our horizons. But because Bitcoin is autonomous, because it's really peer-to-peer, mm-hmm. it really is, and because it's distributed inexorably, and because it's global, it's going to, I think government will not choose to close it down.
Mm-hmm.
I think government will probably decide to say that we got to report on our tax returns and everything that goes on in bitcoins. Moreover, the government will welcome the aspect
yeah.
of Bitcoin that every transaction is published.
Right, right.
That's the way it works.
Yeah.
And
which is a fascinating misconception, I think, early on of Bitcoin, is that it was a great anonymous, mechanism because you just gave it away and that was it. It wasn't traceable.
Well,
it's the reverse. It's actually that every transaction is known to everybody in the network.
That's right. Except that they know it as a transaction.
Right.
And so it is cash, as it were.
Right, right.
It's a lot more anonymous than mm-hmm. submitting your credit card
sure.
and your
yeah.
mother's maiden name and all the hustles where for free goods you have to virtually
mm-hmm.
strip naked on mm-hmm. in front of your internet camera.
Yeah.
I apologize
for that, and I'm not going to send that type of stuff to you anymore.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
That's a big relief.
So we're early on in kind of the regulatory attempts to regulate Bitcoin. What do you think of the early attempts by the IRS or the Treasury? I mean, it doesn't even matter. But on the one hand, is it money that is it a commodity that gets taxed? I mean, are these are not important questions to you in the long run?
Well, I think that it's they made the right decision that people who buy them as who are participating in the speculation
mm-hmm.
about the ultimate success of
mm-hmm.
Bitcoin do have capital gains, and
mm-hmm.
it's just as well to have them. If we're going to have a capital gains tax,
mm-hmm.
Bitcoin profits are suitably taxed through that system. So I don't think that's an outrage or an obstacle to the success of the system.
Final question. I mean, you talk in kind of in your work over the course of your career. It's interesting. I mean, and here you're very enthusiastic about this, you know, an internet where it's a peer-to-peer distributed network that is now building a civilization. It's not simply parallel. Are you thinking about moving to the internet anytime soon? if you do, well, you promise to write or come home on holidays. But I say, like, I mean, are you talking about a kind of singularity type of, or singularity is the wrong word, but like kind of a migration to, you know, this electronic distributed network, and that's where real meaning will be, what real consciousness? I mean, is that where you're going with stuff?
I think those are interesting speculations, and I'm interested, though, now as a business proposition. I got a company that I'm doing with Stephen Sprague called Rivets that's using the trusted platform, not the trusted platform module, but a similar kind of secure vault function to create secure Bitcoin wallets, because the Bitcoin system is vulnerable not in the blockchain, its great advance, but in all the interfaces to the blockchain. And so I think it's a great business opportunity, and so does all of Silicon Valley think it's a great business opportunity. Mark Andreessen, who I wrote about in Forbes ASAP decades ago, is the leading exponent of Bitcoin, and John Doerr has finally succumbed, and there, you know, there's a whole.
Well, so what, you know, final thought. How do you tell the kind of backward-looking reactionaries who are like, no, it's all about gold, it's all about silver, it's all about current, you know, paper currency. You know, should they just give up, or you know, how do you convince them?
I mean, gold is still important. I mean, gold and Bitcoin share this fundamental roots in time, and it's they aren't chiefly governed by the capital function. The capital changes and is volatile, and is thus not a stable source of measurement. And it's time that's a source of measurement, and both gold and Bitcoin share this feature. And gold has really important value as an insurance currency. You know, if the internet collapses, or you know, there are all sorts of reasons for gold being important, and gold and Bitcoins, I think, will converge in value because they both are intrinsic monetary.
So they're like the Sonny and Cher of the internet, right? You want them both.
My book is going to be called Bitcoin and Gold, and I actually have made things that are amazing discoveries to me. Nobody understood what Newton was doing. Isaac Newton, during his 30 years running the Mint, was actually inventing the gold standard and getting rid of silver, and creating a currency that could sustain the British Empire, and hacking gold. Newton's alchemy. People disparage Newton. He went crazy. He became an alchemist. What he was doing was hacking gold, proving that gold couldn't be reverse engineered, just as all the Bitcoin hackers
He was the anti-alchemist then. Couldn't make fake gold. You could have real gold. That's interesting. Well, we will leave it there, George Gilder. Your latest book is Knowledge and Power, The Information Theory of Capitalism and How It Is Revolutionizing Our World. And you are a Bitcoin evangelist in the same way that Isaac Newton was an evangelist against the Catholic Church. He spent a lot of time calling the Pope a werewolf reading the Book of Revelation. Bitcoin is the future, says you, right?
I think so.
All right. Very good. George Gilder, thanks for talking to Reason TV.
Thank you so much.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.